Okay. Hey.
Catch a vibe. We're gonna get you to the other side. Going you way back to the time. Reminisce and relax your mind. And catch a vibe.
Catch a vibe like a throwback. You with the bridge, about to turn it up. Picture perfect, no Kodak. And ain't no holdbacks. We getting real, getting raunchy. We bridge millennials, baby. We keep it saucy.
What's up, y'all? Welcome back to the Bridge Millennial Podcast. The Bridge Millennial Podcast is the shared perspective of the Bridge Millennial generation on culture, media, mental health, and society. What's good? I'm Shannon Ashley.
What's up? I'm Rob. How y'all doing? I hope everybody's in for a great conversation today. I'm excited about this episode, Shannon. We're about to kill it.
We about to kill it, and we do have some news for you, just some quick housekeeping. So we had to say goodbye to our passport poppy. Blake will not be joining us moving forward, but we wish him the very best in his future endeavors, and we're going to miss him.
Yeah, I feel like Blake has so much talent, and now we're coming out of the pandemic. I can only imagine what he's going to do with, you know, the different opportunities that he gets to take advantage of now. So I'm wishing him well.
Yeah, he gonna blow up and he gonna be back. I have a feeling that we're gonna have him back as a guest. But speaking of guests, today we are bringing on our first official glitch homie.
Yes.
Okay, so our glitch homie is going to be what we're going to refer to anyone who is a guest of the show. And today, the glitch homie is Sam Sinclair. We're gonna let her in. What's up, Sam?
Hi, guys.
How you feeling? You
good, 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 good. Ready to dive into this?
Yes. Well, welcome to the Bridge. We're happy to have you as the very first glitch homie. I'm honored. To all the homies? Shout out to all the homies who listened to our first episode. We had over 40 plays, and that is absolutely amazing, y'all. Thank you for supporting all of y'all at homies.
Yeah, all the homies. Actually, we I think we gained like almost 100 followers since our last episode.
I mean, come on.
I'm pretty sure we cleared like 60, 70, 80. But yeah, thank you guys for showing love and support. Make sure that y'all are blowing up that Instagram, participate. We got a fan mail highlight where you can take surveys, and we're going to be reporting on those surveys as you guys take them. And tell us what you think. Give us some feedback. We got some goodies and some surprises coming up for y'all.
So you Listen, if you all send us a voice note, you might be featured in the fan mail on the show.
Yes, you will.
So don't be shy. Send us a little note. Let us know what you think.
Yes.
So we're going to hop into vital information.
And now, more vital information for your everyday life.
I was really struggling to find something positive, but we're going to start with the things that are vital for you to know. And this weekend, there was a slew of tornadoes that hit the Midwest, and it has caused a lot of devastation in the areas of Kentucky, Arkansas, Tennessee, Missouri, and the death toll is predicted to be over 100. So really keep your positive energy and your prayers out to these families. Some people have literally lost everything. They're calling this just the most devastating series of tornadoes in U.S. history. So,
wow.
And they are accrediting it to climate change, though there hasn't been enough research just yet on how it relates to climate change.
Yeah, that's a little bit of a stretch.
and that's kind of what it is. I think somebody came out and said that this is because of global warming and climate change. And, you know, researchers are like, hold on, wait a minute. That might be true, but we can't prove that yet. It makes me really, really sad, but it also makes me feel like I'm in the middle of the apocalypse, kind of.
Yeah.
You know,
that's how it feels these days, because there's a lot. Every day you get up and it's something else and something else and it's something else. And it's just like,
it's too much.
Yeah. Like, God, if you come and just say that, like, you know. Like, it's a lot. It's a lot, you know.
I just when we have like these major natural disasters and things, I feel like people, and I don't like that people do this, that they kind of take the incident and adapt it to their own belief system or narrative and say, oh, this is happening because blank. I think it's more important just to understand that the families have been impacted by this, regardless of why it happened or who believes what, why it happens. This is something that impacted someone's family, and, like, you know, be sensitive to that, but don't use an incident to spin and promote your own idea or agenda or narrative, because especially something that's taken lives, like, this is not like a publicity stunt for you to, you know what I mean? So.
Well, you know, everyone always loves to play the blame game, no matter what it is, even natural disasters. But I believe it was the FEMA, the chief of FEMA, that actually came out and said it's the new normal because we're in an era of climate change. But again, there is no research currently to.
Did FEMA give them relief?
FEMA is doing what FEMA does. And
oh, boy.
We are going to leave it right there.
Somebody call Kanye.
Listen. Because for me, these government agencies, you can only trust them as far as you can throw them. And I've never seen anybody throw FEMA. So I can't really speak on that. But
FEMA was not very present during the past few issues. Like, we still remember Katrina, and we FEMA forget. Just was not, you know. So I don't know.
Let's hope it's a situation where they
I just hope that somebody is contributing, some organization, somebody is helping these people, because I hate when there are natural disasters that people just go like unhelped, like no aid at all, like they're just overlooked. So I do hope that if it's FEMA, I hope that FEMA is really stepping up this time and helping these people. I hope the Red Cross steps up. I hope
the firefighters,
fire departments,
everybody.
Hope, yeah, all of these resources that we have in abundance and that we spend a lot of money on, I hope that we're using those resources to actually do something about this.
Because this is what you're needed for. This is actually. This is what you need to be. This is the priority. And a lot of these homes are completely flattened. I saw a friend sent me a post about their family in Kentucky. The entire house is flattened. And the mother had to rescue her entire family. So it's entirely real. It's a little bit too real. And we just, again, send so many positive thoughts and prayers to the agencies, to the government workers, to the assistance, anyone providing assistance or aid. Everyone needs it right now. So we're with you. So moving forward, we are going to now talk about Jesse Smollett and his guilty verdicts. So he was right. And here we go. So he was found guilty on 5 of 6 felony counts of disorderly conduct for falsely reporting a hate crime. Now, the internet is definitely having mixed reviews about this, but a lot of people feel as though, and he hasn't been sentenced yet, so time will really tell, but a lot of people feel that he has basically been just hit with a book, you know, and it's really not that deep. A lot of people feel like there are a lot of other cases that should have taken precedence. And actually, I believe that the case was originally dropped, but then picked back up by an independent prosecuting company because they were like, no, he's not going to get off the hook. So I want you all to weigh in on your thoughts.
I did see the mixed reviews. It was kind of split down the middle. And I can honestly say I understand both sides, because I think it's not even necessarily just what he did, but at the time that he did it. I think he was kind of riding on the coattails of the state of the country at the time. And I think that's one of the reasons why so many people believed it, because it's like, yeah, like, this is the climate that we're in right now. This is what's happening. So I think he did take advantage of what we were all facing as a community. And that obviously is not cool. But on the other hand, it's like, okay, well, I've seen other people get off and they've done way worse. Yeah, if we're being clear, you know. And it's just like, this is it. It's like, yeah. Yeah, threw the book at him because, you know, yeah. So
he's facing possible jail time. Meanwhile, Kyle Rittenhouse is on podcast talking about absolutely how he doesn't fuck with LeBron anymore.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Like, he's on a world tour right now. So
yeah, and you know, like you said, it a lot of people feel like he kind of made it that much harder for Black gay males who are facing hate crimes. And it's kind of like the little boy who cried wolf type exactly situation. And he could possibly have made it harder for people to believe those who are actually facing hate crimes. And that really sucks. Then on the other hand, you have, I don't know if y'all remember Amy Cooper, but yeah. Amy Cooper was this white woman who basically called the police on her neighbor because her neighbor, she had like some type of situation with her neighbor where she wasn't in control of her dog or something like that. And she called the police on him and said that he had threatened her life and he had been assaulting her. It went viral and she kind of got away with a slap on the wrist. And so I read an article kind of comparing the two and how, you know, race has been such a factor in how these cases are treated. And it really kind of makes you think, because in the article they mentioned the crack epidemic and how that was treated and how anyone involved was aggressively pursued and aggressively put in jail. And then you have the opioid epidemic where it was more, you know, middle-class white people, and they were treated better and people were more sympathetic, if you will, on the plight of opioid addiction. And yes. So I'm actually watching a TV show. I just finished watching a TV show about it, and it was on Hulu, and it really shed light on that. But then I was thinking, like, damn, there has been no show shedding light on the crack epidemic in that way, because on the show is very much so, and the show is called Dope Sick, by the way. It's a great show. Yes, Dope Sick.
I gotta check it out. Where's the streaming on?
That's on Hulu. Yes, okay, Dope Sick is a good show, but you know, after reading that article, I'm like, you know, because they spent all of this time trying to treat this as an illness, but the crack epidemic was totally different.
Yeah, it was definitely criminalized. Definitely criminalized.
Yeah, for sure.
They actually opened up a center in Harlem, I think, where like you can legally shoot up, basically. And that just rings true to everything that you're saying. Like, they didn't have none of those where people could like, you know, get some crack and they're not in trouble. You know what I mean? You have this this facility now where it's like, you know. So their activities are a lot more romanticized, whereas ours are criminalized. And I think that just rings true to the whole Jussie Smollett situation versus Kyle Rittenhouse situation. It's like,
yeah, I think that if Jussie Smollett was of a different demographic, I feel like the media approach would have been totally different with this. I think it's really sad that the takeaway from this situation is having a discussion of him setting back the culture when, like, this happened in Chicago, right?
Yes, I believe so.
So Chicago has like 300 to 400 homicides in 6 month periods. So I feel like, although, you know, he was wrong or whatever for what he did, I feel like there was a greater conversation that just wasn't had. Like, why is this a conversation? Why is this not a commentary on actual things that go on in that area? You know, why are we not talking about the safety of that area? Does this represent something that happened to someone else? Like, I don't know. I guess I don't really have too much feelings about what he did, because I don't really know why he did it. I don't know what the end goal was. If it was just publicity, then that was really wrong. I don't know. It reminds me of the Rosa Parks story, how Rosa Parks was not the first one to refuse to give up her seat. She was the one that was politically approved to have that conversation. The actual girl that refused to give up her seat was a teenage, dark-skinned, pregnant mom. And the NAACP didn't see it fit to have her as the image of that movement. So they chose Rosa, who worked for the NAACP, to restage that incident to have the conversation. So with that being said, that's why I say I don't know why he did that. I don't know if that was him bringing light or just, I don't know what it was, but I feel like we could have let him deal with the consequences of his actions while as a community and as a media just had a greater conversation of something that actually mattered, you know?
Yeah.
So,
I mean, I think that's ideal in a perfect world, but the era of social media and, you know, fetishizing celebrities and stuff like that, that the main point, the big picture, always gets lost in the sauce. Yeah. Because between journalism and, you know, everybody wants the big story. So nobody's going to take the time to shine light on something if it's not mm-hmm. something that's going to get airplay, if it's not something yeah. that's going to draw attention, where they could throw their name at the bottom. This article was written by XYZ. Like, mm-hmm. if there's no mutual exchange, no mutual benefit for them, they're not going to shine light on it. So they don't care right. about crime rates in Chicago and stuff like that. There's nothing in it for them to, you know, report on that.
Yeah.
So that's just one of those things where it's just like, even if he had good intentions, it's still, it's one of those, the end doesn't justify the mean situations.
Right. And also the headline is more exciting to talk about right now, you know? So regardless of if there were details of the case that just got overshadowed by the media, we don't know. But the notion that he staged this incident is like media gold. Everyone is want that to be true. They want that to be the hot topic. You've seen the memes. I thought the memes was funny, inappropriate, yeah, but it was still funny.
Hilarious.
And as a person of like the LGBTQ community and just being a fluid person, I was kind of hoping that he actually was shedding light on a bigger issue, but I was personally kind of hurt. I was like, why would you? Cause I was going to bat. I was like, ain't nobody gonna pretend like that. Nobody's gonna do that. That's too harsh. That's a horrible experience. No one's going to put themselves in that. But then it's like, but you dad did. Like,
no, I knew it wasn't something. As soon as it came out, I said, some of these details just don't make sense. This is something is not adding up. And then the interview came out. And for me, I'm a big body language person. So I go on YouTube. I'm crazy like this. I go on YouTube and I look for these body language experts, and they assess these high profile interviews, and they go through and they literally look at every detail that a person's face is making, read it and connect it to, you know, whether they're lying or omitting. Mm-hmm. Yes. And when I went to YouTube to kind of look up this interview when it first came out, the lady was like, a lot of his body language alludes to he's omitting something in the story, not necessarily mm-hmm. lying, but there is something that he's omitting. And he was making a lot of high stress facial expressions when he was asked certain questions. And if you guys are like bored one day, just kind of go down that little rabbit hole, because it's very interesting. And I, in real life, like to read people's facial expressions when they're talking to me.
I think it was a series that I
Lie to Me. Cool.
Yeah.
So I had a my professor, Paul Ekman, actually wrote the research for that show, Lie to Me.
Okay.
And we studied paralinguistics. We studied his text and we studied micro expressions. That was like the coolest, like, I love psychology, but that was the coolest shit ever. That was like the coolest class. But yeah, micro expressions is a part of paralinguistics. For those of you who don't know, micro expressions is a quote unquote tell that shows itself within a tenth of a second in your face expressions. But then paralinguistics is all of that body language and all of the things around what you're saying that sometimes tell a different story. The problem though is that it is easy to see that someone is omitting something, but it's not always easy to see what they're omitting. And when it comes to people reporting race, hate crimes, sex crimes, and things like that, their body language, if you look, there usually is something there that it feels like they're omitting something. But some, for those true incidents, it's just really hard to wrap your head around that. And it's hard to say what happened because you haven't said it to yourself yet. Mm-hmm. So it reads as if you are hiding, but it's, you know, so I don't know. I don't want this to discourage or to take the value away from people actually reporting when they have experienced those types of things or feeling like they're being examined when they're reporting those types of things, because a lot of people do, but I don't know. I'm just really like numb to it at the same time. Like it's one of those things that I just can't wrap my head that anyone would stage this type of a thing. Like
it's random. But he also, I mean, he ruined his career, and that's two careers, by the way.
Absolutely.
That's two careers because he's an actor and a singer and a really good one too. So, I mean, a lot of people are saying that that was his punishment and that's enough because nobody's going to take him seriously from this point on. And I think, Jesse, I'm not sure why you did this, but I will say to what you just said, Rob, is that it is hard as a Black person, and especially a Black gay person or a Black woman, any minority, when you're telling your side of a story, people are always going to be skeptical. You just have to tell it anyway. So like you said, don't be discouraged, but as a minority, that's life. That's what's going to happen. We see that with the Me Too movement. There are a lot of people who are like, you just want the money still to this day, like, you know, and there is no way of really knowing, but you still have to tell your story. So, yeah. Did you all see the Kanye and it was really Kanye's concert featuring Drake? Did y'all see that on Amazon?
I did not. I saw some clips of Drake being Drake.
wait, what that mean?
He was like... He was up there rapping. Whose rap was he rapping? Oh, he was rapping Kanye's rap. Like, yeah. Drake is a whole, that's a whole nother like tangent, honestly. But I did not see the actual concert, but I did want to check it out because I feel like that was one of the first times that Kanye would have been in an intimate setting. It didn't look as theatrical as his other stages when he usually does concerts and things. So I really I want to see him in a more personal, creative environment. So
a lot of people were saying that like it reminded them of the old Ye. He did all of his vocals. He had a lot of breath control. It was really good. And he actually shouted out at the end of Runaway, which was a song
originally written for Amber.
For Amber Rose. Let's go ahead and say that. He inserted Kimberly Kardashian's name at the end of
more
that
specifically,
song.
Specifically, Kimberly.
Yes. He said, come back to me, Kimberly. And promptly the next day she filed to be single. I guess that was her response.
Yeah. They were already, the divorce was already filed, but she filed to legally be considered single.
Single, yep. Mm-hmm.
Even she before said, the divorce is final.
I didn't know you could
until she did it. So apparently,
well, she is a lawyer.
Yeah.
Is she a lawyer? Right. Does she pass the bar?
Oh, right. She did go to school.
She's chasing law. She's following in her father's footsteps. She's very passionate about that.
I heard she's good.
Yeah.
I heard she's good.
She's passionate.
Some people are on the fence about that as it pertains to if it's really just her celebrity that kind of gets her the results that she does get, or if it really is kind of just she's her father's child and, you know, she's just actually good at it. Mm-hmm. So I would like to believe the latter. I think she, from my opinion, I think she has a passion for it. And I feel like if she's using her platform to actually, you know, obviously get results, then I don't see anything wrong with that, honestly.
Use that celebrity. That's what it's there for. Because other people are not going to.
That's what we will be doing.
Right. Other people are not going to be able to have the impact that you're going to have as Kim Kardashian, period. So more power to you, girl.
Yeah, but that whole shouting out thing, I found it a little bit strange because there was some circling in the blogs a couple weeks ago that he was also dating somebody.
Some little
young girl. So I don't see why. I mean,
well, there's rumors of them possibly having agreed on an open marriage, or the status of their marriage having changed. But we know that that's shut down because Kimberly is singular, like the number one. So at the end of the day,
But then the tea was also that Pete Wentz and Miley Cyrus was on Jimmy Kimmel's show a couple nights ago or whatever, and they said they saw Miley Cyrus pulling up to his crib after the show.
Oh, so, that's Pete Davidson. That's Pete.
Pete, the comedian Pete Davidson.
Yeah. So Pete Davidson and Miley actually are old friends, and they're hosting an episode of like SNL together. So I think that they were just trying to make more out of that than it really was.
I mean, the media does what the media does. Yeah. So that's very possible.
Last time I checked, I thought Miley was with somebody. I'm not entirely sure. Miley blows like the wind. Okay, you know, she goes where
she's free.
Yeah,
I love that for her.
She's a free bird, so there's no telling. But she actually, so what she did was on Jimmy Fallon, she sang a song. She sang a version of "It Should Have Been Me" to Pete Davidson, like kind of as a joke, like he should be dating her as opposed to Kim Kardashian. I kind of feel like it was really just a joke, but you know how the media likes to spin things. But I think Kim and Pete are like kind of official, low-key. So,
or well, Miley also has a reputation of not knowing how to read the room. So even if it was a joke, it's like, girl. Is this the time for that joke?
You know? But you know what? I think that might be what it is, because Pete Davidson also has that same like elephant in the room awkwardness when he tells jokes. It's
that
like they're extremely inappropriate, and it's like,
wasn't he the one that was dating Ariana Grande?
He sure was.
Real candid and real like. Mm-hmm. Open book about everything post breakup. So I mean,
she got a song called Pete Davidson.
Do she?
On her album This Is Sweetener, on the Sweetener album. I'm a big Ariana fan. But yeah, so Pete Davidson was a rebound for her after she dated Mac Miller. Mm-hmm. And shortly after Mac Miller passed away from a drug overdose, and all of her feelings of, you know, not really being over that kind of mm-hmm. came back in the middle of her relationship and her engagement with Pete Davidson. Mm-hmm. So I just think that whole thing didn't work out because she's, you know, crying over somebody who is not there anymore, but she's with somebody else. And I think mm-hmm. that was like a huge strain on their relationship. So
yeah. I mean, that is really an interesting, because I always wondered about that. Like, I don't feel like that's wrong.
I don't think it's wrong.
Mm-hmm. I mean, I do understand that the other person would be a little, you know, uncomfortable, you know, but I feel like if it's somebody that you spent a significant amount of time with, being intimate with, being in a relationship with, regardless of if you're together or not, like, them not being on the planet anymore is a lot heavier than just opposed to them, you know, not being in a relationship with you anymore. So I feel like that's expected. I feel like that was normal for her to grieve him the way that she did.
I agree, but I don't think that there was closure before he passed. I think she ended the relationship because of his drug abuse problem. She could no longer be there to see him do that to himself. And I don't think that she had really processed her feelings about it. And then with him being gone, it's like, she jumped right out of that relationship to another relationship. And it's kind of like one of those things where it's like, you realize like those feelings are still there. Yeah. And I think that was maybe the difference. She wasn't over it when he mm-hmm. died. Mm-hmm. So it's really hard. And she kind of chronicles it in her next album that came out. What is the album with Seven Rings?
Is that the same one that Thank You Next is on?
It's called Thank You Next. Thank you very much, Sam. but on Thank You Next, a lot of the songs like Ghostin, especially Ghostin, she talks about still being in love with somebody who's not there while you're in a bed with somebody else. So, yeah. But she bounced back. Is she married now?
Yeah, she married.
Come
she
on. Married.
So go ahead, girl.
And I'm happy for her. He's low key. He's not a celebrity. And sometimes I feel like that's what celebrities need. You don't need to be with another celebrity.
I agree.
Especially really high profile celebrities. Like, it works for some people, but for other people, it's like, you need somebody who's just going to be grounded, who's going to hold you down, and who's going to give that sense of normalcy in your life and not be traveling all over the place and doing their own thing. So good for her. Girl, we are happy for you. And I'm ready for the next album. Okay.
Yes, goody.
Heard it.
All right. Well, let's move into our next segment. What you got for us, Rob?
Oh, yeah. We are moving into the way back.
What we going to do right here is go back. Way back. Back into time.
Okay, so for today's way back, I switched it up a little something because I had disclosed it and Shannon was like, oh, I want to be surprised. So I was like, well, let me switch it up real quick.
Oh,
so you. This is my question for y'all, and there is a right answer, okay? Do you remember the original Power Rangers?
Yes. Especially Kimberly, the pink one.
So my question for you, Shan, since you needed the surprise, this is your quiz.
Oh my goodness. Why I set myself up
okay.
Like this?
I'm going to give you how much time? I'm going to give you 20 seconds.
Okay.
To name the five dinosaurs of the original Power Rangers.
Oh, nah. You're not going to do that. I don't need any seconds for this because I don't know them.
You don't even know Kimberly's? It's Morphin time. And then they...
This is a heart, like this is like a test.
You gotta give me one
test. Velociraptor.
Throw it in the garbage. What we're not gonna do is that answer. Homies at home, I want y'all to bear witness.
I really can't.
Pterodactyl, Triceratops, Sabertooth Tiger.
Okay. Oh, that's right.
Tyrannosaurus.
Okay. Tyrannosaurus. Okay. Dang, I said the one that wasn't in there.
The one? There's plenty that's not. And Velociraptor.
I know. Now that you say it, I have it. But that was not in the forefront of my mind. I'm so sorry.
So did you guys know that the Power Rangers was actually based on this Japanese Spider-Man rendition show? It was pretty much identical, like even down to the graphics. It was very much identical of what the Power Rangers is. That whole seismic comic book animation is a Japanese novelty back in the day. And what they did, they basically just carbon copied that and just sold it out here.
Was it the same writers?
Yeah. So they tried to sell it to different companies, but a lot of companies wasn't really feeling it. I can't remember who
the Power. I would have been one of those companies
because I bet they was beating themselves up though.
I hated Power Rangers.
You hated Power Rangers?
No,
they scared me.
Oh wait,
like the monsters?
Oh, I can
the
see
monsters
that.
And the graphics were so
Rita was
ugly.
Really, it was.
Rita was ugly.
Rita was also like, I feel like there was a little comedy in there. That's why I feel like it wasn't that scary, because I feel like it was like they would embarrass the shit out of them in every episode. So it's like at the end, it's like, I can't even take you seriously, you know, for all the villains. It's like, okay, girl, we'll see you next
time. So do y'all remember that, you know, Power Rangers was Mighty Morphin Power Rangers, but do y'all know it turned into multiple different types of Power Rangers over time?
Yeah.
There's actually 26 different types of Power Rangers.
You mean like the show, like 26 different shows? Or
yeah, like they have the ones that we know, which is the Mighty Morphin Power Rangers, but then there's the Alien Power Rangers, and then there is Power Rangers Zeo. And
okay, I remember that.
Turbo, which I thought Power Rangers Turbo was kind of lit. I'm not going to lie.
I remember Turbo.
I kind of thought Turbo was kind of lit.
I think that's when the graphics started getting a little bit better.
Yeah.
I'm sorry. I couldn't.
You could.
Because I was much younger at that time, so I was more so into animated stuff.
Yeah.
So that monsters was ugly. It reminds me, there's like a 3D version of Land Before Time. Remember that ugly dinosaur?
You know what you're not gonna do is
they were ugly and they scared me. I couldn't do it.
I miss Land Before Time. That was actually my shit. What was the little main dinosaur's name? The gray one.
TP.
You're close.
Something like that.
Oh my gosh, that was such a good show or
they
movie.
All scared me, child. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So that was what the Power Rangers was. But when I was looking into that, it got me thinking about like these different backstories of like shows that we watch, and I don't know why, but the Wild Thornberrys had come up. I know y'all remember Wild
Thornberrys.
Of course.
Do y'all remember Donnie?
Of course. The baby.
The little
Did y'all ever wonder where he came from?
Like the fucking jungle, right?
He was wild and he ain't tall.
It's
he
like growled. They legit,
on all fours.
He was a feral child that was raised by like chimpanzees, and his parents were killed by animal hunters.
Yeah,
I always just assumed that
he was a part of the family.
Kid
no, he was like he came from like the jungle. Mm-hmm.
He was actually their in some ways he was kind of like their pet.
Yeah, it was giving very much so pet actually.
So was he the only one that was not part of the family? The other two.
Well,
were.
Darwin wasn't either the bunky, but.
No, no, no. I mean, like the other girls, like Shorty with blonde hair.
Those are the actual kids. Yeah,
okay, she was giving grunge realness. What was the sister's name?
I don't remember her name.
It was Eliza. So Eliza was the younger sister.
Eliza Thornberry, right?
And the older sister, I cannot remember her name, but she was giving a crop top. Plaid shirt,
blonde wavy hair. Yeah,
the look is back right now.
Yeah,
so
very much so.
Yeah. If we're gonna go into those shows, my favorite show, and we actually did a poll. We did a poll about this.
That's Told by Ginger.
Girl, how you knew I was gonna say that?
They go hand in hand.
Listen, As Told by Ginger was my shit. I felt like she was in middle school. I feel like at the time I was in middle school, I could really relate to like her and her like journal entries and like being super emotional about her crushes and stuff. As Told by Ginger.
What?
What do you mean?
I hated it. It was at that time in my life where I just liked action stuff, and As Told by Ginger was too feelingsy for me.
It did get very like
it didn't appeal to my population. Like
it was very melancholy.
As Told by Clarissa or Clarissa Explains It All, it just didn't really connect with me. But oddly enough, the show that did was Daria. I thought Daria was a real one. That face when she look at you dead crazy, like, that's my homie. Daria, you know, get me. She understands me.
At the time, Daria was not for me. I feel like I need to go back and watch these shows. Though I was like a really emo child, Daria just wasn't. I watched it, but it didn't really reach me. Like you said, As Told by Ginger didn't reach you. I think mm-hmm. that show was really about like puberty and just like that awkward phase. Mm-hmm. And that's why I could really relate to that show.
Y'all, can I show y'all?
Yeah.
Wait, come look at Daria's face.
Yeah, I'm tired of you.
Yes, the original side eye. That's what it is. That emoji? Yes,
that side eye emoji. That's if exactly that's the what
side
it eye,
that's why I said that's what they built the side emoji. Eye emoji.
Wow.
Yes.
Yo,
wow.
Daria was life. Like,
absolutely.
Daria,
her,
is
this chick right here, the cheerleader. I always thought she was on drugs.
Probably.
I thought she was meant to be like, what is she doing, bro?
Like, caffeine pills? Hey, y'all, listen, this is like a segue, but remember that episode? Did y'all ever watch Saved by the Bell?
Of course.
Oh, yeah.
Absolutely. Y'all remember that episode when Jesse was on those caffeine pills and they did like this whole thing about drugs and she was supposed to be performing with the girls. It was her, Kelly and Lisa, and they had that song, Put Your Mind to It, Go For It, Get Down and Break a Sweat. And I remember she was supposed to be performing and she was like, I can do it. I can do it. I'm so excited. And she broke out crying. Oh my God. So iconic.
I did not remember.
What?
I don't remember that.
When I was younger, I was more interested in watching shows like Saved by the Bell as opposed to like As Told by Ginger or stuff. I think because it was more sitcom-y.
Yeah.
And I think like as a kid, because I was like an only child up until 5, so I was surrounded by adults most of the time, I was just very much more into like sitcom-y shows, or if it was a cartoon, it had to have humor. Like Power Rangers and anything like action packed, and I was just not interested. It had to be like humor, you know, Tom and Jerry, Looney Tunes. Like it had to be funny.
Yeah.
So Saved by the Bell was that show, though. Like,
yeah,
I don't. I knew I liked it because I can remember the theme song in my head. When the teachers pop the test, you know you in a mess. Before songs coming last night, like I remember being hype about it, but I don't remember it connecting with me. I feel like Saved by the Bell was that generation's That's So Raven. They actually was, don't quote me, but I think they was they was recorded in the same studio. That is the Saved by the Bell set that Chelsea and them go to school at.
Okay, the lockers look the same.
I just wish that I was in like, if I was in like junior high school type stuff at that time, like really into a social life, I feel like Saved by the Bell would have really got to me. But I don't know. I've always wanted, like even now, like I'd be looking to find myself in the media that I'm watching. So if it didn't really connect or speak to me, then I lost interest. I was just like, I can't. But that is all right, because you're Saved by the Bell. You just popped the test, you know you in.
You know what? What we're not gonna do is Millie Rock to Saved by
the Bell. Are you Millie Rocking right now? I mean, Saved by the Bell was that shit. And for me, like, I look back on like Lisa Turtle, and for real, she was like a big inspiration for me just because of the fashion. She was so fucking fabulous. Mm. She was so fucking over it, and like, I don't know. She was just over. I loved her. So that's who I kind of saw myself as in that show. That's and I remember they had the storyline where Lisa got with Zach for like a hot second. And I was like, she finally got some action other than fucking Screech. And it was like one episode.
First of all, what you're not going to do is talk about Screech like that.
R.I.P. though. R.I.P. Yeah. R.I.P. But I'm just saying, she's the only person on the show who didn't have like a consistent boyfriend, you know. And they always kind of do that to,
because she's I think she was a token character.
Yeah, they always
because
do that
I saw
black characters.
Yeah, I saw something where they were talking about that even with Insecure and like Kelly.
Mm-hmm.
Like they were saying, like, why is it that like she gets these like rinky dink storylines and like the comedic relief? And I'm kind of glad I think it was the first episode that they actually touched on that a little bit. Like, you know, she was asking, like, yo, am I a joke to y'all? Like, what's up? you know? Mm-hmm. And I think people are just saying, like, Insecure does a really good job of representing millennials. You know, every woman could kind of see themselves in the show. Every man could kind of see themselves, you know, every scenario mm-hmm. that you could think of. But then it's like, there are still some things where it's like textbook, super what token. We've seen already, you know? So it's like, yeah. because she's the plus size mm-hmm. figure, she don't really got a man. And, you know, she's everything loud, is a joke. And she's loud yeah. and obnoxious. And,
right.
You know,
and she a freak. Right. Right. She a freak, but right. don't really. Exactly. She doesn't really necessarily connect, like mm-hmm. they don't have feelings or something. So I definitely see that. And by the way, fun fact, this is like moving a little bit backwards to Saved by the Bell. But did you know that Lisa's character and Zach's character actually were dating in real life?
Oh
yeah, so behind the scenes he was actually dating her. They had like a couple years ago on Lifetime, they had like a behind the show mm-hmm. type of series about them growing up on that show, and they were actually dating. And I think it was like a thing, like, why can't this be a storyline on the show?
Right. Mm-hmm. Yeah, because it's not aesthetically pleasing. Well,
remember to like back in those, like back in, like we're talking like the 90s, sitcoms really did not capitalize on that quirky, awkward humor. And they always assumed that no one would relate to that character, so it would be a good punchline character. Mm-hmm. But what happened is that these actors embodied it. There was a lot of people that connected with them, and they became like accidental stars of the show. Like, I know that you guys know that Family Matters, Urkel was never meant to be a big deal. He was written as just like a side ensemble character, but he stole the show. So the show centered around him. So like, I wonder if Saved by the Bell, maybe like Screech was that character and she was just like supposed to be a passing character, but she actually connected with an audience and turned more into like a second token character.
I actually think that that's true, because she wasn't a part of the original cast. She came along a little bit later, because I feel like they were in junior high first.
Yes, so they were really, really young.
They were really young. So shout out to Saved by the Bell. We love all of y'all. And all of them are doing really well, I feel like, mm-hmm. except I have not seen Lisa. Lisa's character. What is her real name? I don't want to keep calling her.
I don't remember, but she had some.
I feel like I've seen her in
struggles. Stuff. Mental health related. I know when they wanted to do the reboot, they were like, originally they weren't gonna include her in the reboot. And like, shout out to the Saved by the Bell fans, they was not feeling that.
I believe, like, she actually came out and
mm-hmm.
like, actually she might have came out as schizophrenic.
I think so.
Okay,
Lark Voorhees, yeah. Mm-hmm.
There we go, Lark. Yeah,
I feel like there was something.
Yeah, there was something, you know, there was something there. But I do think she is on the mend, which that's amazing.
Amazing news. Very good, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, we love to see, you know, mental health is such a reality. And as a celebrity, I feel like putting yourself out there just gives people more to relate to, because mm-hmm. what is normal anyway?
Mm-hmm.
It's not even a thing. So.
But that's what we got for today's Way Back, okay?
We love it. All right, so Sam, can you take us into the icebreaker for today? What you got for us?
Okay, so you know, I have a question.
Not coming on the mic like that.
Because like you know, because I don't know if I want to embarrass myself like that, but we gonna get into it though.
Okay.
So what is the most embarrassing fashion trend that you used to rock?
Oh my god,
that's really hard. I feel like I was asked this question recently and my response was something like, I am never embarrassed by anything that I used to wear. But I actually, that is not my answer today.
You had a revelation.
Yes, because something just popped up in my head and I'm just going to go ahead and say it. Do you remember those like Chinese slippers from
chancletas
from the beauty supply store, and they were kind of like mesh with like the flowers on it?
Yes.
And everybody wanted them so bad. And I think
flavors.
Right. I only wanted them because other people wanted them, because now I'm looking back and they were not cute. So I'm going to say, and I don't even know if that's the term for them, but back in the day, we called them Chinese slippers. I don't know.
That's how I remember them, Chinese slippers.
Those were not the move.
Supply store, because I don't know why they are at the forefront of teen trends. Like,
well, they are. First of all, let's not sleep on them.
The flight jackets? Like,
yo.
Why was we in the beauty supply store heavily like that? Like,
because it's cheap.
Yeah.
Because it's cheap. But what flight jackets are you talking about?
You remember maybe that was a New York thing. It was the there was a time where we was in high school and flight jackets was like in. And everybody was getting their flight jackets from the beauty supply store. It was those thin mesh varsity type flight jackets with the little snaps instead of the zippers, and it just was a thing. And I was just like,
kind of like,
I didn't know what people was getting. Yeah,
mm-hmm. I don't know what you're talking about,
bomber jackets. But I wanted one. I just didn't know where people were getting them. And then somebody was like, "Oh, they're in the beauty supply store." Or you would walk past the beauty supply store and they got them hanging out outside and stuff, like 2 for $5 type jumpers like that. But the lady wants you to hurry up and buy and get out of the store. But
the ones with the orange inside.
Yeah.
Okay, so in the South, they used to sell those at like Foot Locker, Foot Action, and places. They really were everywhere. But we were not calling them flight jackets where I was. We were calling them, I don't know what we were calling them, but people were wearing them.
Yeah.
Yes, I didn't wear them, but
yeah,
people were wearing them.
Some people call them bombers. They really are. They were styled after aviation jackets, like people that actually fly have that style. I don't know what's the significance of it, but
that's, yeah, they had the little patches on them.
Yeah,
I remember.
I think it's in the pocket here. I think it's just because of the way they sit in the situation. I don't know. Mm-hmm. Let me stop assuming. I don't know nothing about no plane.
Yeah, I'm crying.
Anyway, my most embarrassing has to be the bandana situation.
Wait, what? What you mean?
You got to understand that this was a different time.
Disclaimer.
I was in the bandana movement. It was a mix between the bandana and the big chain movement. I don't know if y'all remember those Rough Rider chains.
Oh, you had a chain with an R on it, Rob?
The double R Rough Rider. I had the bandanas around my head, hanging out my pocket, pants on the floor.
Looking like you was from St. Louis?
Whole Dipset.
No, you didn't.
It was bad. It was so, so, so bad. My pants used to be so baggy that you really couldn't even see my sneakers underneath them joints. Like,
it's giving Fat Albert. Remember the way that the pants were so baggy and all the top of their shoes came out of the pants.
Oh my gosh. I don't know. That I'm still just cringing. That was like the most embarrassing fashion trend, and I just was like, why was I dressing like that?
Because everybody else was.
Yeah, that's true. Everybody else was in hip-hop,
that was huge.
It was so whatever crazy. They were doing in hip-hop is what we were doing. Yeah. But I'm just gonna say this, like, I still am good. I have bandanas in every color. Look,
put them to sleep.
Yeah, I mean, no, I wear them for fashion.
All right, so
I wear them for fashion. I feel like
we used to iron them joints to get the crease right. Like,
all of that.
Especially when Joel Santana came out and he was wearing it like a hat, like a little crown. So that's why I'm investing in starch. It was a commitment. Like, guys, no, it was a commitment. It wasn't just as simple as going to get the bandana. You had to get the bandana with a certain pattern. You had to starch it. You had to not put it in the sun. It was a whole situation. You know how guys take care of their sneakers with like surgery? That's basically how we treated these bandanas in school. But it was really untasteful and very tacky. So y'all got to understand that was a different life. Okay.
That's another beauty supply store gem right there. You can get every single color. And let me tell you, I'm not, like, I still wear bandanas. I'm somebody who, it could be very well 2003 tomorrow in my world. And as long as the entire outfit is from 2003, I really don't see a problem. Actually, it's funny. One of my friends from New York, when we were in when we were in college, and it was just becoming a thing to do like throwback vintage stuff. You know, I remember one day she was telling me like, oh, it's okay to wear this. Just wear it on a throwback day. I was like, what is that? She was like, a throwback day, like a day where like, and it was just like,
when people repeat the same thing. Like, what you mean?
And I thought it was like, I thought it was like a New York. Yeah. I thought it was like a New York thing. Cause I'm like, oh, a throwback day. She's like, yeah, a day where, you know, you just decide to maybe wear a throwback jersey. You wear the shoes that go with it. Like, it's a whole look. And so after that, I was like, okay, well, today is a throwback day. So any given day for me, it could be 1976. It could be 1969. It could be 1993. And that is A-OK, as long as the whole fit is in the
whole
era.
Thing is there.
Yeah,
the whole fit has to be in the era, because I'm
gonna pull up on her BC fit. Like,
I'm here for it.
First of all, what is BC?
You gonna have the sandals. Like, just
what is BC?
BC, like before Christ.
Oh, I'm crying.
Oh,
how can I believe?
Like Roman.
Why did I think that this was like some type of name brand that I don't remember? Before Cry. Okay.
Get
out.
Got the sandals with the little, that long little.
With the toga, with the frock.
With the little, one little skinny rope around.
Okay. Here. And it could be very well giving that. It could be very well giving BC, and thanks for the idea, Rob. I love it. Oh my god.
Now she's gonna pull up on the timeline.
Yes,
period.
On my Mary flow, period. First of all, y'all, why this is the last thing, because we're gonna keep going back down the throwback clothes journey, but the last thing I was thinking about these today, I was thinking about Jerbo jeans today. Do y'all remember Jerbo jeans and the like the Velcro? Oh, they were so fly. They're still fly in my mind, because
there's certain things that just still go in my head, they still go. And Jerbo is one of those things that like that and Evisu.
Okay.
Those still go. I had a pair, like this was well after school, but I had finally had a job and I was making money. I bought myself a pair of vintage Evisu canvas sneakers.
Okay.
They was like one of a kind. I ain't even know, y'all. I was wearing these joints up and down, wearing them to work, wearing them on the train, to the point where I wore them out. Do you know those sneakers is worth like $10,000 today?
Not $10,000. Damn, you be.
And I found them. My feelings was hurt. I've been looking for them ever since. What do you mean? Like, but they don't make them anymore. But I found them at like one of those little boutique shops on 34th Street. And they was just there. It was like $250 for the pair. And I was like, I really, really wanted those. Like, and I just tore them things up. It was so sad. So sad. I know.
Well, mine is actually not fashion. Mine is it's a hairstyle. Y'all remember the ponytail with the hump?
Oh,
that go with the coach belt.
Oh my goodness, not the hairstyle with a whole belt that goes with it.
That was the coach belt. It was awful, and I really felt, and because that was like the first hairstyle that like I could do myself. So like I felt like
walking
I
around
was
here looking like killing Tony it.
I felt like I was killing it, and I had the little. I don't know if you remember when you. I think people still do. You know, when baby hairs, you got them three lines right here.
Yes, people still do that.
The feathers.
Yes.
But yes. it's just consider, and I got a big forehead, so it's just the forehead is all shiny, and then we got the lines at the side, and then
of course,
the hump there.
That's the only way, and then you gel it back. Yeah, it's the only way to do it.
And you couldn't tell me I was not it.
I used to like girls that had their hair like that. That, and I used to like, y'all know when y'all had the twisties for your birthday, the twisty going into the crown.
Not the twisty going into
that crown joint where it was like a crown of twisties, and then it was just down in the back. Like
it'd be sewings in the back. It'd be like, Jerry Curl weave.
That
in
was
the back.
Birthday.
If it was like
girl,
giving crochet.
And it had like the little tractor trailer joints, and then it had the crown right there, and then it had down hair in the back.
Now, I have a picture with my hair like that.
It was probably your birthday.
I can't.
I'm gonna have to find it.
For us, it was in the South. It was like the two strand twist into like a little Bantu knot, and it would be like the Bantu knots in a row. Yep,
that's one.
And then
too.
The back in the back would either
it was down.
Yep, it was that down in the back.
That was a thing. That was a thing.
It sure did with a vengeance. And I
yes, there's like YouTube sure trends did. Where they're showing you how to do the tutorial, how to do it like that. Yeah, it's definitely back.
Yeah, yeah, I used to love seeing girls with their hair like that. I was like, oh, that girl is important. She's going to an interview for an internship or something. Like, because anytime a girl had a hair in one of those two styles, she always had like a nice blazer going on. And there was a little skinny coach belt. Y'all know the little skinny coach
belt.
I'm
really tired of you in this coach belt.
And that's what was going on. And it was some Chinese slippers at the bottom. And that's what it, y'all know. I'm not lying.
That was the look with the hump.
Or it was the Chinese slippers. If it was the right time, it had the name belt with the little initial on it with the rhinestone.
Well, for me, from my era when I was rocking that, it was those with, I don't know if y'all remember those A Solo boots.
The
A Solo boots.
Yeah.
Those A Solo boots was they had the high school girls in a chokehold, child. Those A Solo boots.
Yeah, I think that might be that probably definitely is.
They look like hiking boots, kinda, right? They were like hiking boots. And they had like they were brown, but then they had like a little bit of some color on it, like pink or blue.
Yeah, they basically look like if you typically think about like the brand Columbia, like hiking boots, like really actual hiking boots. They look just like hiking boots.
Yeah.
But I don't know why they was in, but those was it. There was the ACGs, like that was a situation.
It's so crazy though. Like I'm really curious to the phenomenon that is like, where does the starting point, how do these trends get started?
Yeah.
One person and then before you know it, everybody, you can't find them in things that people would not even pay attention to.
Yeah.
You can't find them in stores no more. First day of school, everybody got on the same shoes. And it's just like, whose idea was it to go pick up some hiking boots and say, yo, I'm going to rock these and I'm going to wear these to school?
Mm-hmm. I think it's like crazy. A chain. I watched a documentary about how it moves down the chain from hip hop culture. First, you have a celebrity wearing it. Then you have a buyer. Then the buyer takes their stuff. And now it's in all the stores and it's on display for everyone to buy. So there is like a chain of how that works. And what's interesting to me is that, you know, y'all are from New York and I'm from Georgia. And that's like opposite ends of the East Coast. And so a lot of these things that y'all are talking about, I'm like, what? I've never heard of that. Cause for us, it was like Feli's, it was a Nietzsche. Like there was some
shout out to Nietzsche. I know y'all had Avrex popping too.
Yes, Avrex.
Like I was popping for New York in like the 92-93.
I feel like what happens, and I don't know why, I've always felt like the South, maybe it just takes a time, but they've always been like a few years behind whatever the North is on trend.
Not a few years.
And I never understood that. Like, I never got it. Like,
y'all I think because New York is like, it's a fashion, you know, like it's, you know, like it's a fashion district kind of, you know, like designers they want their stuff in New York City first, you know? So we always get like a sneak peek of what spring is gonna look like, what the trends are gonna look like for 2022. We already saw those in like the end of 2020, you know what I mean? So we're kind of always ahead based off of just the fact that New York is really somewhere that these people want their stuff to be at, and then when everybody else catches on,
black market too. So
what
you see the next year fashion in December, you then emulated the whole catalog and now you're ready for the following year, so that's true. And then also we're just constant, I don't know why, but maybe it's because it's so many people, New Yorkers just get bored and want the different. They want something strange. They want something out of the box. And as soon as something is available, we like test drive it. Like, I don't know.
I always wanted to live in New York. I actually love New York. I have like a little love affair with New York. Ever since I read this book, The Babysitter's Club, Jessie Goes to New York. She was the only black one.
I remember that scene.
Yes, she was the only black one and she was a dancer. So that really resonated with me. And she had this lady, who was a white lady, the author, by the way, she wrote a book about her taking New York, and she went up to dance at like a black studio, like Alvin Ailey or something like that, some summer program. And it was giving like black realness. And like in the book, Jessie was like, I don't want to come back because now I got black friends, when she was from a little small place. Yeah, she was from a small town in Connecticut called, I think, Stony Brook or something like that. And so ever since I read that, and actually my dance company took a trip to New York and actually did go to these places, Broadway Dance Center, and different places like that to train, I was obsessed with New York. I've always been obsessed with New York. So I'm vicariously like taking some of this stuff from you guys and living vicariously. So thank you for that.
Yes. Well, we both can tell you that my sister at this time was obsessed with Atlanta. Something serious. She was very much obsessed. So
yeah,
she's living through you vicariously. Tiffany, you know what?
Shout out to you, girl.
Shout out to Tiff. She probably in somewhere in Africa right now. I always joke with her because she works doing research for cancer in a lab in New York. And she's always on vacation. And I'm like, Tiff, who is working on cancer? Like, we're not going to be familiar with this. Like, I tell her all the time, like, sis, we're not going to get there because you're never at work.
Not who's working on cancer. Like, oh my God, can that be the name of the episode? Who's working on cancer?
Please do. Like, who's working on it? But she's always traveling in different places in the world pop up. Like, at this point, I don't expect her to be at home anymore. Like, at any given time she called me from her job, I'd be like, oh, you're on your lunch break? Oh, you at work? Huh. Okay.
Listen.
She's straight
May
up.
May we all strive to be traveling, you know.
Let us do that. Like, I want to be as grown as my little sister one day.
Use your PTO, guys. Use your PTO. Use your
Please
vacation
do. You
days.
Got it.
Please. Oh,
got
fuck it. That. Let us work from home. Fuck that. It's about too. 2022.
Both.
I'm kidding. A little bit of both. There we go. A little bit of both.
I'm trying to do my job from other places.
I'm working at home. Like,
yeah. I can teach my classes online. Fuck what you heard. Period.
Yes, but that's what we got for where we at today. Like, I was feeling that iceberg. I feel like
we went back.
We might have to bring Sam back for another episode because she's giving all the energy right now. She's giving all the vibe and all the swag. And I'm just like,
yes.
Really?
The New York swag. I love
yes.
it.
Listen.
Okay.
You see my head? Shh. No, don't do that. No, I'm
We love to see it. Thank you for that, Sam. I like that little that fashion flashback. You know, that's my shit. So I appreciate that. So I'm going to take us into another subject right now. And this is going to be a little interesting. So I'm going to start off with a question and maybe just like a little background information. So I want to talk about fear. And it's like, fear has always been an interesting subject to me. I think it's because fear can be so many different things. It can be like an innate response. It can be like a reaction to like trauma. It can be irrational. It can be rational. So the first thing I want to ask y'all is, do you have like a phobia? Irrational or rational? And if you do, have you ever conquered that phobia? And what did that feel like?
I do. I have a phobia that my mother also had and my best friend Ebony also has, and it's called trypophobia or trypophobia. And it's a fear of small holes or dots in asymmetrical patterns. So like if you think like a beehive or like a lotus seed pod and stuff like that, that's really, yeah. So that I didn't realize until I got over there and met her, and she was like, oh snap, that's a thing. And she was teaching me about it. I was like, oh snap, this really is a thing. And my mother used to notice certain things about me in my room. And or even like when I was washing dishes, I would always get like, I would have to clear out all of the bubbles in the sink. I can't like with that was not going to work for me. So she would look at me sometimes and she was like, why do you do that way? And I said, oh, well, I have this thing about like holes and dots and stuff like that. And she was like, wow, you got that from me. And I was like, wow. I mean, you could pass on something else aside that and allergies, but okay, like we'll give it that. But so when I started college, after I finished business school and I was going into psychology, I was having like trypophobic nightmares. And at the time I was I had just got my first apartment in my studio. I was pretty much on my own, sleeping on the floor, waking up, going to work. And it turned into a texture issue for me. So even to date, like I wear, like if I wear wife beater undershirts, I will wear them inside out because I don't like the seam touching my skin. It freaks me out. Now they've gotten rid of that, but like stuff like that and like tags, like if I'm laying down and I feel like a tag touch, I just jump. Like I get very like anxious. So it was to a point where I felt like it was damaging my life, you know? And I was like, okay, I have to get over this. So what I did, I forced myself to watch trypophobic YouTube videos every day. Like no matter what, I forced myself, and it got worse over time. And I did that for a little while, and then I stopped doing it. And from there, the things that used to trigger me wasn't as serious, because it wasn't as like triggering as what I was forcing myself to watch. So that was around the time that I had just learned about exposure therapy in school and stuff. So I was like, okay, well, maybe if I just force myself to experience the most uncomfortable scenario, the smaller scenarios won't bother me as much. So in that way, I kind of have gotten over it. I can see certain things and it does make me uncomfortable, but it doesn't make me as uncomfortable as other things as it used to, I guess. So yeah, that is my little phobia scenario. Still today, like I don't like stuff like lightly grazing my skin. That is an issue. Like even when I'm in a relationship, I have to tell whoever I'm, my sister will tell you, if you're going to wake me up, you need to wake me up. Don't do that gentle shit. Like I start swinging. If Tiffany was waking me up, she has to jump back because I just start swinging because it's very triggering for me. And it reminds me of that. Now, that is a very specific phobia and is usually connected to a very specific type of trauma, which is interesting. Phobias can be linked to traumatic experiences. But I did overcome that and I did get through that. I still kind of deal with like texture issues, which is called tactile defensiveness. I still deal with that, but I can deal with that. That's not a big, you know, that's not an issue. So I knew I had to get past that trypophobia stage. And it was actually a series of American Horror Story that's the reason why I didn't watch. We was talking about this, Shannon. There was one of those that I couldn't watch and it had that warning on it. Like if you were trypophobic, then you should not watch this. So I never really did watch it. And then I started watching it and it just fucked me up again. And I was like, I can't, I fucking can't. So yeah, as you can tell by my anxiety surrounding the issue, it's a real thing, but I'm in a better place with it now.
Wow. I didn't know that phobias could like be passed down. Like genetically, that's really interesting mm-hmm. to hear that both you and your mom had the same phobia. But for me, I got a couple different things going on. I would say I've always had a fear of heights, which is what? Acrophobia?
I don't know.
I think it's acrophobia, just because there's like a Six Flags ride called acrophobia. And I think that it's like they just drop you.
Six Flags over Georgia. Oh,
see what we're not going to do?
Six Flags over Georgia. Yes. Six Flags over Georgia. And so actually being from Atlanta was really difficult because we have one of the best Six Flags. And being somebody who has a fear of heights, I also have a fear of roller coasters. So it was really tough being that child who like held your friend's bags on the bench outside the ride while everybody else is having the time of their life. I just couldn't get with the way it made my stomach drop. And when I rode rides, I would close my eyes and just hold on for dear life and just hope that I don't fly off of the ride. So over the years, I have pushed myself to face my fears. I definitely did indoor skydiving, not outdoor, but I did go to, I think it's called iFly in Baltimore in this area.
Nice.
And it was really interesting. And I was really good with the form because I'm a dancer. I was able to like put my body in the right position. And so the person who was your assistant, your aide inside of the, I guess, wind tunnel, once you were in the position, they would ask you like, do you want to go up? Now in the class, they told us thumbs up if you want to go up. And what go up means is they will like send you spiraling up, all the way up and all the way down, or a thumbs down if you don't want to. Right. So I'm pretty sure I gave a thumbs down, but the person was like, thumbs up. All right, let's go. And I literally was screaming my head off, but I'm going to tell you that it was a really exhilarating experience. And,
wow.
You know, that adrenaline is something that I feel like I don't know that, but it was very high. It has extremely high ceilings in there, and there's like a wind tunnel at the bottom. So at least I'm going to say 50, 75 feet. And so
no, you can keep anything above 3.
Yeah, it was an experience. And then roller coasters was something that I just figured that I would never like. It's just not for me. And I went to Hershey Park for a dance competition for my students. Their national competition is generally in at Hershey Park. And so we got some free tickets, and my boyfriend at the time went to the park, and he was so excited to go with me. And I told him beforehand, I'm like, I don't ride rides. So I don't know why you're so damn excited, because you're not about to be riding these rides with me. This is not like a thing. And he forced me to get on the ride. And I remember the first ride we got on, we're telling the guy, he's like, all right, are you ready, ma'am? I was like, actually, I want to get off the ride. And my boyfriend's like, actually, no, she's good. And I'm like, no, actually, sir, I want to get off the ride. Like, I'm starting to freak out. And my boyfriend's like, she's fine. And so the guy is like, I don't know what to do. Should I let her off the ride? He's like, sir, she's fine. He's like, look, you're good. We were in the front row. And he's like, look, just open your eyes and, you know, ride the ride the way you're supposed to. You can't close your eyes because you don't know what's going to happen next. And that was like a revelation to me, because I always close my eyes. And so opening my eyes was a different experience. And it was actually really exhilarating, because I knew it was going to happen. It's not like I would, you know what I mean? It's like, if your eyes are closed, you can hear it creeping up. You can feel yourself going up, but it's different. And so I feel like at that moment I conquered my fear, and we had the most amazing time. So fear of heights is something I still have, but I feel like I kind of conquered the fear that day, and it felt like really, really fucking good. So that's my little, that's my little phobia story.
Well, my eyes be closed so tight, you would have thought I was Brock from Pokemon.
Oh, like, I really can't. I really can't.
The way I just envisioned Brock.
So did I. So did I, with the brown hair. Yeah.
My eyes be closed, but that's what's up. I'm glad that you were able to experience that and enjoy the experience. So now, you know, you have a better emotion connected to it.
Yeah, it was really fun. I was giddy even. Like, I was laughing, you know. It was a different experience. I would suggest, Rob, just to try to go.
No, never mind. Not going to happen. How you doing, Sam? What's your
phobia? Right.
What's your phobia, Sam?
Phobia. I probably would say driving. I do not like it. I've tried it. Oh, like, I'm obviously, you know, get around and stuff like that. So you got to move around and stuff like that. So I really try it only because I know I eventually have to. But I drastically dislike driving. I don't know why. I've never been in a car accident, like anything crazy or anything like that. Mm-hmm. Besides like maybe like the minor fender bender, you know, run into somebody's bumper or something like that. But I don't like it. It makes me sweat. It makes me anxious. I feel like I don't have control. Like, I don't know. It's just not one of those things that I like to do. However, for the people who have like tried to like pull it out of me, I have discovered that I do feel a little bit more comfortable driving SUVs than I do driving cars. Mm-hmm. I think probably because I maybe can see the road better. And it's bigger, so I feel maybe a little bit safer. And then also with seeing the road better, I feel like I have a little bit more control over what I'm doing with the vehicle. So that is a little bit more comforting. It's not like a kind of like a all is lost. It's like, okay, so maybe if I could get, you know, more comfy with driving like a, you know, Jeep or a truck G-wagon. Or something like that. Imagine.
I can see you in a G-Wagon. Like,
everybody says that. Everybody's like, dude, I ultimately see you in like a big truck. Like
a Hummer.
You know, like ultimately.
But you know what's so interesting? Crazy, people's comfort. What you're describing has a lot to do with your center of gravity. And that's something that people don't think about. Mm-hmm. But it's the same, like, feeling the momentum and feeling safe in the momentum. Like, it's a difference from feeling the momentum of riding a bike versus being on a roller coaster. They're different centers of gravity. And I was just talking to Kendall about this, where he has experience driving big trucks. Like, anytime I'm driving a large, like a Jeep or something, I feel very unsafe and very uncomfortable because I don't like the momentum. You know, when I stop, the car still kind of gives you a little something. I don't like that. So I like smaller cars where I feel lower to the ground and I feel more in control of like that stop and that go. I feel like it's kind of like, it feels like riding a bike almost, but driving, I always say people should be more conscious of driving than they actually are. I think it's better to be a little bit, to have a certain level of healthy fear versus just going willy-nilly and like, you know what I mean? Putting other people's lives.
Yeah, I can't be whipping it up like that. Like, and like I said, I've driven myself like before and stuff like that. But it's been such hard work to like even, like I got to prepare myself a couple days before. Just to build up like the mental fortitude to like, okay, you know, it was extremely debilitating at one point. But my village kind of helped me, you know, kind of basically, and I had to explain this to somebody who was also trying to help me. Like, you got to help people within their scope of comfort sometimes. Mm-hmm. Sometimes it calls for trying to get somebody out their comfort zone, but then you also can't be too pushy. And I've experienced where it's like, oh no, like just do this. Or it's like, oh, like we're going somewhere, and it's like, oh, get behind the wheel. No.
Yeah.
You cannot do no. Like we just not gonna go nowhere. You know, like I need to prepare myself. And I feel like I made the most progress with people who had that patience with me. Like if I need a second, give me a second. You know, if I'm moving and it's like, okay, we going fine, but like I'm I get physically tired. And I try to explain that to people sometimes. Like, you get physically tired.
Thank you.
Because you're holding tension in your body.
My whole body, like, you like, your foot is like this. Like, it's just too much. Like, tell me the front of your shin don't be hurting if you drive for a while.
Yes, because everything is so tense.
But you know what? It's crazy because I'm the opposite. Like, driving, I don't know, it's like in my veins. And I'm not to say I'm like a speed racer or anything, but I do feel like it's in my genetics. Like, my dad, he raced cars. And it's funny, I prefer SUVs, and they're statistically not safer because they can flip on you. But I prefer the way it feels. I learned how to drive in a Navigator. And since then, it's just
drive in a Navigator.
In my mom's Navigator, yes. And this was like a famous Navigator. Like, everybody around town knew it was my mom's car. She had a white Navigator, and anytime it pulled up, everybody knew. But yeah, so I learned how to drive in her
cribs.
Yes, I drive
cribs. Got it.
Yeah, listen. I absolutely love to drive, and even though I don't have a big car currently, it's a big body, like small car. Like, I can't, it's a mid size. Cause I can't do crossover. Yeah, I can't do like a really small or just like a something that's longer, mm-hmm. Because I feel like you said, Sam, also it's like a power thing because people think that they can get over on you when you have a small car, and it makes it really difficult. Like when I first got my car, I got my first ever car was a Toyota Camry. And of course, okay. I was going from driving my mom's Navigator everywhere. So, I mean, my mom, she didn't really go many places other than to take me places and to go to work. So when I first started driving, I was driving her Navigator, and it was such a big difference. The first time I never told my parents this, but the first time I took out my Toyota Camry for a spin, I could barely control the car. And I like as soon as I pulled off, I think I had to like pull over because I'm like, okay, I clearly can't drive this car the way that I drive my mom's truck. So it was definitely an adjustment. And I noticed how everybody just kept trying to get over on me and how people kept cutting me off. And it was just a totally different thing. So I understand like having a bigger car gives you just a little bit more power on the road. It's kind of like more reassuring. So I definitely get that.
And I'm small. I'm 5'3". So like I feel a lot safer and a lot more, you know.
I'll be in the car with my knees on my chest, like, ooh, safety. Like,
oh yeah, I drive real close. A lot of people like I drive they have to readjust. Me too, like, and that's the thing.
No, before the car sees what's going on, I gotta
that's
know.
The thing. I be whipping it, but I be so close to that wheel that anytime anybody else drives my car, they have to like put the seat way back. Because I be right up on it because it gives you like a little bit more control, especially because I'm trying to like.
Yeah, I gotta see.
Yeah. And driving in DC is a whole nother animal, y'all. It would scare the shit out of you, Sam. Imagine. I would not.
Listen, remember, I'm from New York City. So that, yeah. I think that's probably one of the reasons too. Like,
yeah.
New York City is just a high anxiety place, regardless, whatever you're doing. Even if it's just walking to the train station, you're just like, like you're just going. So learning to drive in New York, for me at least, was not fun. When I moved and I was like driving down in Virginia, it was a little bit less anxious for me. Ain't nobody behind me blowing up, you know, honking a horn. So I wasn't too worried about if I was moving too slow. Cause I'm like, even if I'm moving slow, nobody honking me. So I'm like, okay, cool. Like I'm moving at my pace and stuff like that. So it was a lot easier when you don't have all those high strung distractions and stuff like that around you. So.
Agreed. Yeah, and I've never driven in New York, so I can't speak to that, but I mean, more power to you, girl. I believe in you. You can do
we it. Gonna get there though. We're gonna get there, okay? Y'all gonna see me whipping it up, period.
Let's go in your G-Wagon or your Hummer.
Period.
Period, Pooh. Okay, yes. That icebreaker was really cute. I'm sorry to have taken you all into like a phobia moment, but I do feel like fears are one of those things that the more you talk about them, the more that you can conquer them. So I appreciate you all being vulnerable and sharing those fears with our homies. And homies, if you all have some phobias that you have, shoot us a little message. Let us know. Again, send us a little voice note. We might put you on the show.
Okay. Well, honestly, guys, I was really feeling this icebreaker. We had a good time. It looks like we're running out of time. So for all of our homies at home, make sure that y'all tune into part two, where we're going to continue this conversation. Shannon's going to take us into the red light district. You know, Shannon be talking about them things. Them things. Okay. Sam is going to be back for part two. She's going to be talking about some things too. And then in part two, we'll also cover mental health and society. Got a really cool experiment that happened with this baby and this glass table that I want to tell you guys about. So
make sure you jump in for that later.
Because right, that's a cliffhanger.
Exactly. But thank you guys so much for tuning in. Make sure that you're following us on The Bridge Podcast. Don't follow that. I don't know what that is. It's the bridge Millennial Podcast. That's where we're at on Instagram. You can check me out. My personal page is just Rob's World. Go ahead and hit me up.
I'm Shannon Ashalia on Instagram. That's Shannon with an O, S-H-A-N-N-O-N _ Ashalia, A-S-H-L-I-A. Holla at your girl.
And you could find me at Note to Sam
Yes. So we will definitely be jumping back into this conversation, hopefully pretty soon. Comment down below. Tell us what you guys thought about our chit chat, and we will catch y'all in the next episode.
Cute. Bye.